Today in the message, I want to talk about something that I don't know that I had ever given a specific message in my life about it, the subject. I can't remember if I ever gave a specific message that was totally devoted to what I will speak about today. You know, I started speaking in the church in 1989 and was spoken about a lot of things in those decades, but what I will speak about today is something that I can guarantee afflicts every one of us. And if I had a dollar for every time I've been guilty of this, I'd have a pretty good little nest egg. I want to lodge a complaint against complaining and grumbling. Your subject title today, the title, the complaint against complaining and grumbling. And we'll talk about this today. It is a serious charge and complaint against an inherent part of each one of us. Not a one of us here listening in that will hear it on webcast or on the local website later. There is none of us that are innocent. None of us have immunity to it. I look back at my life and I've done my share of grumbling and complaining. And times when I didn't realize in the moment, that's what it was. Just grumbling and complaining and grousing, we might say. Whining. Now the whiners are the worst. Do you like to be around a whiner? No, I don't either. I wrote in my notes, and I'll try to stay a lot with my notes today because I was rousted out of bed early that morning. This message has been put together for weeks. And again, I was rousted early out of bed and wrote this message out because the moment it was really, really in my mind and heart, and I couldn't do much of anything until I put it together. But in my notes, I wrote, to grumble and complain produces nothing but wasted energy. It just is wasted energy. And how do I know that? Because I know too many times I've done it and in the end realize you just wasted hot air. Complaining and grumbling, by and large, reveals and can reveal and really does a petty mindset to be small-minded when you think about it, because so much of what we might complain or grumble about really, in the end, really isn't as important as sometimes we think it is. And I've been there. And I share this with all of you. I gave it last week in the two churches last week, and they all came up. You ought to have seen the altar call I had after that sermon in both places last week. And you know I'm teasing about that. But they realize it impacts us all because we're all guilty of it. Grumbling and complaining, I wrote in my notes, is simply an overindulgence of the negative. It is just an overindulgence of the negative. I went online early that morning. I'd gotten up and I was putting it together, and I wanted to go online, and I went to the internet, and I wanted to find some choice sayings about grumbling and complaining. And I found some that I want to share with you, some choice statements, sayings about complaining and grumbling. Here's your first one. The quote was given, "You're so caught up in grumbling and complaining and seeing what's wrong that you have no energy or time to appreciate what's good." That's from Joyce Meyer. Many of you may know who she is. And I wrote, think of all the wasted time that we've had sometimes kind of belaboring a subject or situation or circumstance, and what good would it do? You had that flat tire coming to church service today. Not that you actually did, but it has happened. And boy, do you grumble. Why did this happen to me? And you're grumbling, you get the jack out, and you're trying to figure out how to use the jack that you've never used before. Or your battery, you go out to come to church, and the battery's down. And maybe you grouse a little, grumble a little bit. You get the point. Another saying that I found online, this one was from Billy Graham. Grumbling and gratitude are for the child of God in conflict. Be grateful and you won't grumble. Grumble and you won't be grateful. That's simple, right? But so true. And how profound that is. If you're expressing gratitude, it's hard to grumble. But if you're grumbling, where's the gratitude? Another one I found. When you complain, you make yourself a victim. Leave the situation, change the situation, or accept it. What I read from that is make the best of things. Always seek to make the best of the situation, make the best of whatever. Things are going to happen to us in life. We're going to encounter always, it's seemingly almost every day of our life, we're going to run up against a situation, a circumstance, or more, a trial, a test, whatever. And it's going to test us. It's going to test most of all our attitude. That word attitude could be such a sermon in itself, could be actually a series of sermons. Attitude. Here's another one I found. This one was anonymous, and actually I loved it most of all. This one, anonymous, says, happiness comes a lot easier when you stop complaining about your problems and you start being grateful for all the problems you don't have. That's good. So long ago when I read the story of the man who complained because he didn't have any shoes to wear until he saw the man with no feet. And that really brings it home, right? You always think that you got this big problem and woe me attitude, and you, who but me has ever gone through this? And you can always look around and find somebody much worse than you are. Here's another one. This came from a Roland Bird. Only talk about problems when you're seeking solutions. Complaining for the sake of complaining is a way to share misery. It solves nothing and emphasizes things that are going wrong. You want your focus on what's going right or what you're doing to improve things. Complaining is a psychological cancer and should be treated as such. So stop it. That was from Roland Bird. In other words, what good does it do in the end? It's wasted time and energy. And when you think about all the times that you have complained or grumbled about something, or I have, and in the end, what positive effect did it really have? Except to keep us kind of sometimes too much enslaved in the moments to negativity. Complaining, grumbling is totally linked and hooked up and by negative attitudes. Finally, this was the last one I found online, and there was a whole lot more, but I wanted to share a few of these. This comes from the healthychristian.com website. Stop complaining and start praying. The Israelites' many complaints kept them out of their promised land for many years. And that's so true. And I turn my attention now in the moment to ancient Israel. Ancient Israel were professionals when it came to grumbling and complaining. They didn't do anything else that well. If you know the history of Israel, there's not much else they did that well at all. They certainly didn't obey God. The vast majority didn't. But they knew how to grumble and they knew how to complain. And it cost them big time. And God labeled serious complaints against their grumbling and complaining, as I will show soon in Scripture. They continually voiced their complaints, and Moses felt the brunt of it for 40 years. I told him and said last week in Birmingham and Fulton, put yourself in Moses' shoes. He had been pastor of them for 40 years. Think about that. And I use that term succinctly the way I want to express it. He was a pastor of the biggest megachurch really ever, because they became even more prolific, and in the wilderness for 40 years, he ministered to them. And it's no wonder if you know the whole saga of Israel and him trying to lead them and them grumbling and complaining every step of the way, it seemed, why he struck the rock twice that day instead of speaking to it. Moses had had enough, and he struck that rock twice in his anger because they had done nothing but grumble and complain, and he allowed it, attitude-wise, to cost him going into the promised land because he disobeyed God. I want you to turn to Exodus chapter 14. And we'll pick this story up. They had left Egypt. And they had left Egypt beginning the 15th. They had left Egypt very clearly beginning the 15th as the high day was beginning. They had left Egypt with a high hand. We are going to the promised land. And you can read in another part of scripture, I won't turn there. They could have crossed the wilderness area in 11 days. And instead, they went circles for 40 years in the wilderness, griping and complaining all the way. And every time they sinned, it's like one minister said a long time ago, every time they sinned, it's almost like God says, do another lap around Mount Sinai. Because all they could do was grumble and complain, and all the miracles and all that God did for them. Remember, their clothes didn't wear out, their shoes didn't wear out. And God fed them the manna in the morning and the quail in the late afternoon. And they were taken care of. And yet, enough was never enough. We pick this story up, chapter 14 of Exodus, verse 10. They had come to the Red Sea. Pharaoh's army is behind them. No doubt the high mountains on each side, the ocean in front. And all they could do was think of self-preservation and their fears in the moment. Verse 10, when Pharaoh drew near, the children of Israel lifted their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. And so they were very afraid, and the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. And then they said to Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, have you taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why have you dealt with us to bring us up out of Egypt? Here they go, complaining and grumbling, and basically questioning even God most of all. And hopefully, God willing, I will follow up with a sermon the next time I come. Hopefully, we'll see on unbelief. It was a type of unbelief with ancient Israel. Verse 12, is this not the word that we told you in Egypt? We told you in Egypt, let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians. Let us stay in bondage and let us remain in Egypt, which is a type of sin. Let us remain as we are, kind of off that sermonette that Matt Jenkins gave. The circumcision of the heart is to change the heart, to cut through, to collapse, to break down, as he brought out. They were so willing to stay as they were. Needless to say, they had uncircumcised hearts. Is this not the word that we told you? Let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians. For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness. And Moses said to the people, do not be afraid, stand still, and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall see again no more forever. The Lord will fight for you, and you shall hold your peace. We see, and you could read the rest of the story later, as Paul Harvey used to say. But we see here Israel, the first test they met, the first occasion, they questioned God. And they harped and grumbled and complained. The first test they ran up against, They did worse than falter. The moment things got uncomfortable, can we use that terminology? The moment things got uncomfortable, they voiced their complaints. Ask yourself in the moment as New Covenant Christians. Ask yourself in the moment as disciples of Christ, as Christians. When you get uncomfortable in any type of situation, what is your first response? Is it to complain, grumble about the situation? And that situation, circumstance, could be anything. It could be that flat tire that you had coming to service. It could be something else that put a kind of a kink in your day, so to speak. What is it when we get uncomfortable? Now, this is for theatrical response. I'm hot. Check that thermostat. I'm cold. Check that thermostat. You know what I'm talking about. I call them the thermostat wars. Last week in Birmingham, I had that little parody. I saw one putting her coat on over here, and I saw another one over here fanning. Now, how are we supposed to please the opposites here? One's putting her coat on, one's fanning. How often when we feel a little uncomfortable in any situation do we start to grumble and complain? Israel, the moment they got a little uncomfortable or afraid or whatever, they complained. I want you to go to Exodus 15. You're still probably right there in 14. Exodus 15, verse 22. Exodus 15, verse 22. Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea, and then they went out into the wilderness of Shur, and they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. Okay, so they're thirsty. No water, 3 days. And when they came to Marah, they could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. This water is bitter, Moses. Therefore, the name of it was called Marah. And the people murmured against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" And he cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree. And when he cast it into the waters were made sweet. And there he made a statute and an ordinance for them. And there he tested them. Notice that. He tested them. And let me hit proverbial pause button and say this. The word wilderness, from a child up in the church, from a child, I was taught that word wilderness is synonymous to a Christian as your time of testing. They had 40 years of their wilderness experience of their being tested. Every one of us, me, all of us, we are going through our own symbolic time of wilderness testing. And we were taught that. And it's a principle that I think we've lost sight of sometimes. It wasn't made to be peaches and cream every step of the way. Because we are going to be tested. God's going to find out who we are and what we are. And do we love him? So you read this here. And so you go on verse 26 and said, "If you diligently heed the voice of the Lord your God and do what is right in his sight, give ear to his commandments and keep all of his statutes, I will put none of these diseases on you which I brought on the Egyptians, for I am the Lord who heals you." Even a promise he made to them about even his protection with physical sickness even. So we see these things, do we not? God, again, heard every word of their complaining, their grumbling, and of course Moses did too. And every step of the way, it seemed, all through their chronicle history, and if you know and have really studied the history of ancient Israel, it's like they couldn't help themselves. Why? Because they were totally carnal. They were totally carnal. They were, as Paul says in Romans 8:7, memory verse. The carnal mind is hostile to God and is not subject to God, and neither can be or will be. And they were carnal minded with uncircumcised hearts again. Thank you, Matt. You gave me another good lead in for the sermon. I want you to turn to Psalms chapter 106. Psalms chapter 106. How much have we ever considered the essence of complaining and grumbling in our own personal life? How many times have we done a self-evaluation? We're coming to Passover soon. We already should be in that reflective mood, frankly, every day. But as we approach Passover closer and closer in the days of unleavened bread, are we looking for that hidden leaven? Grumbling and complaining can be like hidden leaven in our life that we don't see it. We don't realize it. We do it too consciously without ever really realizing, hey, I'm grumbling, I'm complaining. And it can be over little small things, and it can be over some major things. But here in Psalms 106, verse 16, "When they envied Moses in the camp and Aaron the saint of the Lord, the earth opened up and swallowed Dathan and covered the faction of Abiram." And it's talking about there again, the rebellion that took place. And you can find that rebellion in Numbers chapter 16 and 17 if you want to go study about that. When Abiram and Dathan and Korah and that great rebellion and those great princes of Israel who saw themselves as the leadership and rejected God's chosen vessel of Moses, and God swallowed them up, and you can read all about that, and that's what's being talked about here. And it says in verse 18, "A fire was kindled in their company." God kindled a fire, and a flame burned up the wicked. And they made a calf in Horeb. Remember the calf that was fashioned when Moses was up there for 40 days a night? The one that Aaron later said to Moses. Moses said to Aaron, "Why did you do this?" "Well, we just threw some gold in the fire, and out came that calf." That's what Aaron said. The greatest spin story in the Bible. Verse 20, thus they changed their glory into the image of an ox that eats grass. They forgot God, their Savior. I would put in there, insert, they so quickly forgot God. Moses barely had been up on the mountain, and they said, let us make other gods a god to lead us. It's all there if you go back and read it. Verse 21, they forgot God, their Savior, who had done great things in Egypt, wondrous works of the land of Ham, awesome things by the Red Sea, and therefore he said that he would destroy them. Had not Moses, his chosen one, stood before him in the breach to turn away his wrath, lest he destroy them. Let me share with you what I said last week to the two churches there. If you know the history again, God was in his anger. He was going to destroy the nation of Israel. It's right there in chronicled history. He was going to do it. And Moses pleaded with him. And Moses' prayers and pleading with God caused God to turn away from his anger and spare them. And I brought out last week, and I bring it out today, God does answer prayers. It's all through the scripture. God does change his mind at times, and our prayers can change his mind. Hezekiah, 15 years added, another great example. God does hear, and he can answer our prayers, and God can have in his mind to do something, and our prayers can change his mind. That should give us encouragement and comfort. Touching on that at the moment here in these scriptures. Verse 24, then they despised the pleasant land, but and they did not believe his word. We're seeing the sin of unbelief. And again, the sermon that I hope to maybe bring next time, we'll see. I've got several finished, but that sin of unbelief. They didn't believe God, but murmured in their tents and did not heed the voice of the Lord. And therefore he lifted up his hand in an oath against them to overthrow them in the wilderness, to overthrow their descendants among the nations and to scatter them in the lands. When it says they murmured in their tents, I read that. My mind is almost in my mind. It's like, well, if we go into our tents and complain and grumble, God won't hear us. That kind of what came to my mind when I put the message here. They went into their tents and they just grumble outside. You're going to grumble. It's almost as if like Jonah going to the down in the belly of the ship, as if what? That God couldn't find him? Anyway, that's just a thought that I wanted to share with you when I read that verse. We'll go inside our tent and nobody will hear us. But God heard them and he was angry about it. I begin to turn the attention now very much to us. I wrote a little note in my sermon notes. Unhappy people complain and grumble. Think about that one for a moment. Unhappy people complain and grumble. And I wrote, it goes with the territory. If one is unhappy, they're going to tend to vent their unhappiness. If they live in a state of negativity, they are going to tend to be negative. If they live in a state of mind of being critical, they are going to tend to criticize. This is who we are. And you know, God's Spirit and supposed conversion at baptism doesn't change and negate our humanity. We will carry our humanity with us until we die. That means we will yet still grumble at times and complain at times, and I will too. Do you know I put this sermon together weeks ago, and you know how many times I've caught myself doing some complaining and grumbling since? But ever since I've given it, if my wife's in range of me, she'll tell me, you're grumbling again, you're complaining again. So husbands and wives here today listening in, you got a mate, so after hearing this sermon, or whoever's close to you, if you start grumbling, complaining, I heard that. By the way, when was the first complaint registered in the Bible? Where was the first complaint registered in the Bible? You're probably not going to get it, so I'll go ahead and tell you. It's in Genesis chapter 3, verse 12, when Adam said to God, the woman whom you gave to be with me, she gave me of the tree to eat. the first complaint. It's the woman, and you gave her to me. That's called passing the buck, too, right? How big a space does complaining and grumbling occupy in our lives so much of the time? Have you done a self-introspection lately and considered it? Or have you just really never thought that much about it? I mean, after all, you might think, well, I got a lot bigger sins to think about than that. There's other pieces of leaven that I need to be trying to put out of my life than that. Well, sin is sin, right? All sin, every sin unrepented of, brings about death. Romans 6:23, the wages of sin is death. Unrepented of sin. How often do we give thought to the grumbling, complaining that even we all along, we do it? By the way, I said last week, which is a true declaration, the next time you go in a restaurant and you order a steak, and maybe you order that steak either medium rare or might even order it rare, and it comes back to you cremated, I would advise you not to say too much to the people in the kitchen because you can't see the cooks back there. You get my drift? I've had steaks brought to me that were close to cremated when I asked for medium rare. And I generally do the Christian thing and eat them. Don't mean I have to, but I don't trust those people in the kitchen that I can't see. And they get a little irate when you send back something, especially if you kind of complain about it. But I got a right to complain. Do you have a right to complain when they do that to your steak? Think about that one for a moment. Do you have the right? Remember the sermon I gave last year? I need to be right. Do you have the right to complain? Do you ever have the right? Well, this is a situation where if anyone ever had a right to complain about something, I got this right to complain. Had a person tell me one time, a member of the church told me in conversation, I'm not complaining, but I'm explaining. Uh-huh. Okay. I've done the same thing. I've complained about something. In my mind, I was just explaining, but stood guilty of complaining in the end. We're all guilty of it. None of us have immunity against it. There is no immunity. Well, there is an immunity against it. It's called God's Spirit, God's mind in us. That is the immunity we have. But do we let the Spirit of God, we let His mind in us, do we let that mind more and more kind of push out the negative things? I wrote in my notes, what causes us to complain and grumble? What are the things that prod us and trigger us to complain and grumble? Well, there's a whole host of things. I mean, so many things that we could consider that causes us to complain and grumble. I wrote, here's a few of them, and I'm sure you can identify with them. Some of these feelings and attitudes. And again, it comes from our human emotions. Everything really does spring from our human emotions. We are people of emotion. Created, God gave us the emotions. But we don't blame God for when we don't handle our emotions in the right way. We should shoulder the whole blame. We are to overcome negative emotion. And certainly not let negative emotions push us or prod us or take us in negative directions and action. But here are some of the feelings that cause complaining and grumbling. Discontentment. Discontentment. You're not content. Dissatisfaction. Restlessness. Can't find what you want. Can't be satisfied. Unhappiness. Annoyance. I'm annoyed. Something, circumstance, situation, or maybe you. Maybe you have annoyed me. Grievances. Anger. Resentment. Again, being uncomfortable. I don't like to be uncomfortable. And when I get uncomfortable, my emotions start doing a number on me, and I want to voice that I'm not comfortable, which leads to complaining and grumbling. I shouldn't have to deal with this, or Lord, why am I going through this? Brethren, grumbling and complaining can cover the whole gamut of all of life. We can grumble and complain even about our personal health not being what we want it to be. I mean, we can grumble and complain about anything, and we do. Worrying, grumbling, complaining because of our worries and fears, which gets into, again, a type of unbelief. Impatience. Oh, there's you a good one. When we get impatient, oh, the negative emotions begin to rise in us. I wrote, and I was putting the sermon together that morning, and men, those of you who put messages together, you know how it is. And you're sitting there in the solitude, and you feel His presence with you, and you know that certain things that you're putting together in that message, you know that the Spirit is leading you. You know that. And I sat there and I thought about a movie that was done long ago. And we older ones will remember the movie. Some of you younger ones may not remember it, but you probably heard about it. Grumpy Old Men. That old movie, Walter Matthau. Grumpy Old Men. And it kind of became a box office hit. And they picked the perfect actor in Walter Matthau to play that lead part. And then that wasn't good enough. Remember, they came out later with a sequel called Grumpier Old Men. I wrote in my notes, do we get mellow and mushy with age? Do we kind of get soft and pliable? Do we get more mushy and more mellow? You don't. And get more mellow? Do we get more, as Matt said, more of that circumcised heart? Or do our hearts stay more hardened and resistant to change? Someone told me recently, and they were so right, somebody said recently, nobody hardly does change well. We don't like change. We don't like change. And when something changes around us, we don't deal with it sometimes very good. And I'm going to say it in the moment. And sometimes when we may even transition and appoint someone else to do a job such as the President of United, we don't understand and we may want to kind of complain and grouse on what's going on. When there's only one true way that we are all following, and that is Jesus Christ. He is the head. And that's who we are following. That's who I'm following. And nothing or no man is going to stop that as long as I remain true and loyal to Him. I had to say that in a moment. And I do hopefully maybe write something this week. Do we just get more grumpy as we get older? I look at myself. Yeah, I got a birthday coming up this coming week. I don't count them anymore. Because once you pass 70, right, all of you who are past 70, you don't count those anymore, really. You don't really celebrate much, do you? I'm having a little fun with you, but... But, you know, I like to think of myself as maybe I hope that I'm getting a little bit more mellow than I once was because youth is so full of pride and arrogance. I've been there too. I've been there as a young man. When you think you've got eternity before you, you feel immortal as a young man, you're going to conquer the world. Nothing can stand in your way attitude. And every decade that passes, you realize more and more your physical limitations and your frailties, and not just frailties, most of all of the flesh that will rob you as you get older, but the frailties of the mind and heart that has to be changed. This subject that I speak of today, we simply cannot be indulgent at all in this essence and this negative attitudes of grumbling and complaining. I've seen it all my life in the church, the culture. I've seen it, experienced it. We had that someone long ago, and I brought this out at Panama City Beach in a message, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago. Years ago at the Feast of Tabernacles, when that certain minister in his message said, he made a statement that went viral before we had social media. And he said, you can't be a grump at the Feast of Tabernacles. And it caught on, and that statement began to be repeated. And every year for a number of years at the feast, people would pass that comment. Somebody might be starting to grumble and complain a little bit. And the person next to him would say, hey, you can't be a grump at the Feast of Tabernacles because we're there to rejoice. If there's one time of the year that we should not complain, right, it's when we go to the Feast of Tabernacles because we're told by God to go there and celebrate and rejoice. So if you're at the Feast of Tabernacles and you're grumbling and complaining, there's something a whole lot more wrong than just what the situation you're concerned about. The greatest concern needs to be with something that's inside you in your mind and heart that needs to be rooted out. Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 10, 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 10, Paul said, this is from the New Living Translation, and don't grumble as some of them did and then were destroyed by the angel of death. Don't grumble because we have the example, as Paul says there in 1 Corinthians 10, of how they grumble in the wilderness and many were destroyed. Again, your title to the sermon, the complaint against complaining and grumbling. The true complaint that I'm stressing today is God. God has a complaint against us and our grumbling and complaining. And that's the whole essence that I hope that the message translates to. He's not pleased when we do that. And grumbling and complaining comes from negative attitudes. God is 100% in Jesus Christ. They are 100% always, every moment, completely positive. We're kind of like the battery with the negative on it, the positive on it, right? Every battery has the negative, has the positive. And don't hook the jumper cables in the wrong ones on the wrong post, you know. God is totally only positive. We are positive and negative. And frankly, too much of the time, we are more grounded to the negative side of things than we are to the positive. You're hearing this. It's as much from the heart as I can speak. I know it. You know it. We know it. And boy, have I been guilty. And since I put this message together weeks ago, how many times I've caught myself complaining about something and I catch myself, that's what you're doing. It's just wasted time, just wasted energy. James chapter 5, verse 9, quoting from James chapter 5, verse 9, again from the New Living Translation, because the New Living Translation puts it in modern English so succinctly that we can really identify it when it says, don't grumble about each other. Or I would say also, don't grumble to each other, brothers and sisters, or you will be judged. For look, the judge is standing at the door. He is always observing. God is always observing us. That's why I kind of get this chuckle when it says they went into their tent to murmur. And it's obvious when I read that, that somehow they thought, well, nobody in the camp will hear us. We'll go in our little tent, we'll grumble. And yet, the one most of all who's hearing them and hearing us is God. The Bible speaks in a certain place, as we all know, of the fact that every idle word will be brought into judgment. And we probably read that and have read that and thought, ain't that nice? Southern English, ain't that nice? And just go right on. But when did you really stop and meditate on that and really think about that? Every idle word, you will be called into account. So putting the sermon together, I thought, well, I think I know what that word means, but I wanted to see what it means in the Greek. So I went back to the Greek, and that word in the Greek simply means useless. Useless. So I ask again, is complaining and grumbling, does it render productivity? Does it produce positive things, positive attitudes? You know the answer. It produces nothing but wasted words, wasted time, and that depends on how long you're grumbling and complaining about a situation. Basically, grumbling and complaining can also be labeled in my mind as almost like trivial compared to the things that we need to be most concerned about. I wrote in my notes, God is the God of peace and patience and love. The supreme being of love and peace and patience and positivity. And in Him exist all things that are pure and positive and wholesome and good. And we look at that, and we look at God, and we look at Jesus Christ, who is the Son of God, and He came to reveal the Father. As we draw closer to Passover and Days of Unleavened Bread, and you'll hear messages, and we'll hear certain principles going back to as we remember, and we're told to remember, and we'll go through some of these things and principles, and we know that God says to remember, and we go back and look at the same things to overcome that we were trying to overcome last year, and we'll keep trying to overcome the same things till we die. Because have you ever figured it out that physical life and our hearts and minds, we tend to just recycle through until true change, conversion happens. God is, I believe, this just in the moment, wasn't in my notes, wasn't in the sermon, just in the moment I had a thought because of a conversation I had with one of you before service. I know that God, right now, I know it. God is doing something on the world scene right now. And He's doing something with this administration. I just don't know where it's leading. None of us do. But I know that God is involved and He is going to accomplish something through this whole process. And it's leading to something that He is setting up. And I know where it's going. And you can ask me that later if you want to. I wrote in my notes, the more that we focus on ourselves, the greater the potential to complain and grumble. The more that we focus on ourselves is the more the potential that we are going to let negative attitudes, negative feelings, emotions. Can I simply say it in a way that we can understand it, that our emotions get the best of us? Me, you, and every one of us, we fail most of the time, it seems, and we get so upset at ourselves when it's all over. How many times do our emotions betray us? How many times do we let our emotions get the best of us? Whether in anger, hostility, resentment, unforgiveness, you name it. Worrying carries with it so much of the time complaining about what's going on, you think now, without really giving as much thought to all the things as that one saying says that is going right in your life. You can't tell me that if you're alive today and you're here alive, you can't tell me that all things are bad in your life. You're here with clothes on. You're here at this service. That's all good. You drove in a vehicle here, I assume. You got here in a vehicle. You had air conditioning. You had heater in it. You got a heat and cooling in your house. You got food in your refrigerator, I hope. I believe you do. All the things you can be thankful for. You know what the greatest thing to be thankful for right now for every one of us? We're alive. We're alive. I don't mind saying it. I went over to visit my brother Rudy yesterday, spent some time with Rudy, and I had to make a pass. I did. I made a pass by the cemetery. I had a few moments there at the grave with Rick and Mom and Dad. And Amy and Alina Beard over on the other side. I do that from time to time. And I think about when I shall see you again, Rick. We're alive. And as long as there's life and breath, what a blessing. And we tend to grumble all along the way like Israel. That old Chisholm Trail, those old trails out west Oregon and California in the old days, those old wagon trails that they took, and those trails were littered with all the things that those people had to unload off those old Conestoga wagons because they would load them down with as much of their things and stuff from to go and take, and they'd have to offload a lot of it, and those things, those trails were littered with that. Symbolically, that's our life in the spiritual sense. We must unload so much on this trail of life that's burdening us down and being burdens to us and loading us down, and we must unburden ourselves with those things like they did the physical items, except we must get rid of all those burdens that keep enslaving us and keeping us, as Hebrews 12:1 says, so easily ensnared by the sins. Go to Philippians 4. Philippians 4. I know the bride is being prepared. I know that. And I wonder how much longer God's going to give the bride time to get prepared. And I know it's happening. And I know my calling involves helping to prepare the bride. Philippians 4, verse 10. But I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at last your care for me has flourished again, though you surely did care, but you lacked opportunity. Not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned, in whatever state I am, to be content. I know how to be abased, and I know how to abound, and everywhere and in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, and both to abound and to suffer need. And I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And I read those words, and I take to heart that Paul is saying clearly, in whatever situation, I learn to find contentment. And I'm sure that Paul did not waste much energy at all on grumbling and complaining. And I don't believe you think he did either. Paul was a man who was filled with the mind of God. Paul was a man who, if you know his story, he went through shipwrecks and beatings and all kinds of trials and tests, shipwrecked and stoned and left for dead, as he says in Scripture. And did Paul have a positive attitude? You better believe he did. How can any of us have and maintain a positive attitude with all the things that swirl around each of us every day? How? The only one way. God in us. Christ in us. Their mind in us. Our hearts becoming like their hearts. That's it. And that takes a lot of effort and a lot of time and focus in yielding and submitting oneself to them and grumbling and complaining. And when we do that, and we do it sometimes to the extent that it does really rise to the levels of being sinful, God then has a complaint against your eye when we do that. Again, until I gave this sermon last week and today, I don't ever remember, and I'm going to use the word, attacking this subject the way I have. In my lifetime of speaking to the church, I have never attacked this subject in the way that I have last week and this week, because I've come to see it's a very important piece of understanding that we all need. And brethren, it amounts to a type of leaven. We're soon coming to the days where we will actually go through 7 days, the days of unleavened bread, that picture putting leaven out. But we don't wait to the 7 days to put leaven out, do we? I hope not. We are focused every day of the year to putting leaven out. It's just that those 7 days, God puts it right back in front of us and says, now look at this again and focus on this. I want to highlight this for 7 days, even to the point that don't even eat leavened bread for 7 days, so you will focus. It is to put the leaven, the sin out, and focus on putting the unleavened in. That's why it's called the days of unleavened bread, because the focus ultimately comes down to the unleavened portion that is supposed to be living in us. And I will be speaking, God willing, about something in a message about that as I get to the holy days at that time. I want to mention something. We were at a general conference of elders. I was ordained into the ministry in 2011. We were at a general conference of elders a number of years ago now. And on Saturday night, as was the policy, The Council of 12 were on the stage. The president, the administration was on stage, and this is the way it would be, was the protocol on Saturday night, and we would have an open mic or two, and any minister, any elder could go to that open mic and field a question or questions to the council or the president and the administration. And so a subject came up, a particular subject came up, and it got a little bit acrimonious. You know what that word acrimonious means. There we are, ministers and wives in this huge room, and the subject matter became a little bit acrimonious. A little hostility by some was displayed. Most of you know Gary Antion, and I don't think Gary Antion will mind me quoting him. Gary Antion is a pillar of the modern church. He is a pillar, one of the pillars of the modern church. Gary was a council member at the time, and Gary silenced everyone when he said, "If you have a complaint, take it to the complaint department in the third heaven." Talk about silencing everyone. That just kind of what everyone needed to hear. Because it was getting into an attitude a little bit of, you know, complaining and grumbling about something. I say it in the moment. We can complain and grumble about a decision made in the church. We can grumble and complain sometimes about a decision the Council of 12 makes that they just made. And we can let that fester an attitude that is misplaced. And I speak very frankly about it. Again, I know who my Savior is. It is Jesus Christ, and I follow Him. Like I said, hopefully I'll write something to share this week. I want you to turn as we finish. I want you to turn to Psalms 142. Psalms 142. What a wonderful collection, array of wisdom that is contained in what we call the Book of Psalms. You could do Bible studies in the Book of Psalms alone for how long? The Book of Psalms is so rich and so full of God's mind and His wisdom and understanding. In Psalms 142, this is reading it from the New King James Version. "I cry out to the Lord with my voice. With my voice to the Lord I make my supplication. I pour my complaint before Him." And that's what Mr. Antion was telling everyone that night. If you got a complaint, stop complaining to one another. Take it to God. And that's what we see right here. "I declare before Him my trouble. When my spirit was overwhelmed within me, then you knew my path, in the way in which I walk. They have secretly set a snare for me. Look on my right hand and see, for there is no one who acknowledges me. Refuge has failed me. No one cares for my soul." When you think that no one cares, or I'm on this all alone attitude, and that of itself becomes a negative attitude that you need to pray about, because you've always got more allies than you realize. And you certainly have each other as brothers and sisters of the faith for comfort, to go to seek help, aid, whatever. "I cried out to you, O Lord. I said, you are my refuge, my portion in the land of the living. Attend to my cry, for I am brought very low. Deliver me from persecutors, for they are stronger than I. Bring my soul out of prison, that I may praise your name. The righteous shall surround me, for you shall deal bountifully with me." In other words, whenever you need help, whenever you need to seek refuge, we go to Him. He is the one who sustains us. He is the one who in the end is going to bring us in the end. And that's really in the end, all that matters is that we come to the end of our life, whenever that is, that we come there As Aunt Evelina said to me that day right before service, I just want to have a circumcised heart. And she did. She died faithfully. And you know, I just don't think it's going to be a lot of years till we see these saints again. Yeah, Matt, the saints will go marching in. It's in other sermons that I have prepared. When you read Revelation 7 and you read about those 144,000 and you read about that innumerable multitude that is standing before the throne of God, and that one of the 24 elders, where did they come from? They have come out of great tribulation and have made their robes white. The saints will go marching in. And what a glorious day that is and going to be. As I finish today, I thought about titling the sermon, just how serious is complaining and grumbling? But instead I title it, The Complaint Against Complaining and Grumbling, because we need to understand that most of all, God lodges a complaint with us when we do that. And every little grumbling and complaining we do, we may tease with our minds and think, well, that's not that big a deal. It is always referred to as those idle words that we speak that we are going to be called and account for. And again, the Greek refers to that word as useless. So now I've got you all up on your spiritual toes. So when you hear your brother or sister from this point on grumbling or complaining, you're going to nudge them and say, remember that sermon you heard?